so a lot of you are accustomed to, if you speak to lawyers, they use terminology that you don't understand. All right. So Professor Mitchell, actually, it was the reporter of the Uniform Partition of Heirs Property Act, okay? And that means he's the person who drafted it. He's the principal writer, the drafter of this. And this has been promulgated by the Uniform Law Commission back in 2010. And for those who aren't familiar with law, promulgate a law is to effect by an official proclamation. It's to put it into effect by this official proclamation of it, okay? And so it's now what we're doing is another form of promulgation. We're promoting it and making it widely known that there's a cause out here to support this Uniform Heirs Property Act. And so it is a blessing to have Professor Mitchell, who's a professor of law and Frederick W. and Vi Miller Chair in Law at the University of Wisconsin Law School. Currently, this summer, he's going to be going down a place where I love and things like that, because you know they got Queen Quet Day and thing down there in the state of Texas. He's going down to Texas A&M University under a joint appointment in the School of Law and in the Agricultural Economics Department. So I know we're going to need to have him back on the show to even talk more about the agricultural economics, because y'all know I'm always about promoting our economic empowerment. But here it is that he has spent several years working on this, and we are making our own continuation of that hashtag Black History 365, because Professor Mitchell is actually only the second person of African descent, the second African American to ever be a reporter for the ULC, okay, the Uniform Law Commission. Only the second one, and that organization has been around for 123 years. I know y'all get tired of hearing the number 150 and 152 on this show because of all the historic moments, so we switched up on you tonight. 123 years this organization has been in place, and he is only the second black man, okay, to have served as the principal drafter, as the reporter. But we are very pleased that we believe in divine order and that this is the time that this was to happen. For such a time as this, he is here with us because as part of his policy work, he's testified at Congress about black land ownership issues, and he's going to be testifying in South Carolina legislature also about the Uniform Partition, Heirs Property Partition Act as well. And so he's done a lot of other community engagement work, and he has gotten different national awards because of it, and he continues to mentor law students so that they can go on and do work for the community and in the community. And you know that's what we are all about at the Gullah Geechee Sea Island Coalition. As I'm trying to say, all day, ad day. And so definitely we want to have enter our halls. I know he's used to being in the halls of justice, but our halls here tonight at Gullah Geechee Rhythm Radio, Dr. Thomas Mitchell. Good evening, my brother. How honored to do?
Good evening, Queen Quetz. It's just an honor to be on your show.
This is wonderful to have you on the show and to definitely hear directly from the person who has written something that I've been following and wanted to get more in-depth details about. So why don't you give my listeners a rudimentary version of what exactly is the Uniform Partition of Heirs Property Act? What is it, and what benefit is it going to be to any of us that have heirs property?
Sure, sure. First of all, I want to say you did an excellent summary of the area of partition law, the history, and how it's been abused. So the Uniform Law Commission is the preeminent organization in the United States that has been engaged in the drafting of what they call uniform acts. I think most people would think of them as a model state statute over the course of the last 123, 124 years. Mm-hmm. So it's vitally important that this model state statute is supported by the Uniform Law Commission that has had quite a record of success of getting its pieces of proposed legislation enacted into state laws all across the country. And I think that that has accounted for some of the success of the act, as opposed to there had been pretty much, you know, 40, 50 years of individual efforts at the in different states to try to improve the law and as it governs heirs property. But they had met with very little success. So let me tell you a little bit about what the act does and the aspects of partition law that have been abused that it takes to address.
Mm-hmm.
So the act has a lot of bells and whistles, but I think of it as having three major protections.
Okay.
So the first protection, as you indicated, that a lot of the partition abuse happens when you have one person who has a fractional interest.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes that's a person who bought out one of the heirs, who then seeks to force the sale of the property,
mm-hmm.
oftentimes hoping to get the property for well below its market value, which is typical. So, for example, the Associated Press had an award-winning series on Black land loss 15 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and they featured a number of different examples of abuse, but one of the primary ones emanated from South Carolina, where you had a female real estate developer bought out a couple of family members, as you indicated from your example, paid them a pittance in terms of what their fractional interest was actually worth, and then ended up forcing a sale where essentially the property was sold for $100,000. And within a year or so, she had subdivided this 300-plus acres and sold off the parcels for a combined value of $1.1 million.
Mm-hmm.
So under our act, the first protection is that if you have one of the owners of a fractional interest, whether that's a family member or a non-family member, and they go to court and they ask the judge to order a forced partition sale, a forced sale of the property,
mm-hmm.
all of the other heirs or common owners who don't want the property sold have the right to buy out the person who has asked for the forced sale, to buy out their fractional interest.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the buyout provision, right? So
okay.
that addresses the, you know, the folks who want to buy out some small interest and then turn around and seek a forced sale, is that they first will have their interest potentially bought out by those who want to maintain ownership of the property within
right.
the family.
Okay.
So that's the first protection. The second protection is in states throughout this country, the courts essentially have two major things that they can do to resolve these partition disputes. So one we've talked about is the sale.
Right.
The what's supposed to be the preferred remedy is actually a physical division of the property, like you were talking about in your tax sale example of
mm-hmm.
what the law maybe should be but is not, right?
It's not, right.
So mm-hmm. in states throughout the country, the court says that the preferred remedy in a partition dispute, in a partition action as we call it, is the physical division. And that only if the physical division can't occur for practical reasons should the court order the forced sale.
Okay.
In fact, though, the states all across the country that have this supposed preference
mm-hmm.
for the physical division
mm-hmm.
have totally undermined that.
Right.
By a series of judicial opinions that says, okay, well, when a court is going to decide whether to physically divide the property or to sell it, that the only consideration that they're going to take into account is economic factors. So the fact that the property has been in the family for four or five generations, the fact that the property could have some very unique historical importance, the fact
right.
that the property could have some very unique cultural importance. Up to this point, courts have essentially said, well, we can't put a dollar value on the cultural importance or the historical importance. So we're going to assign it no value and merely look at economic factors.
Mm-hmm.
So even that, and we'll get to the third remedy, why even under this kind of what I call these economics-only tests that courts have been using,
mm-hmm.
Well, they are faulty for a different reason I'll talk about when I talk about the third remedy. So essentially under the under this second provision that we say, so we say no, that we reject this notion that property is only valuable and could be reduced solely to its economic value.
Right.
And we indicate that, no, there is importance in terms of its heritage value within a family, its historic importance, its cultural importance. Mm-hmm. So under the Uniform Partition of Heirs Property Act, a court cannot conduct an economics-only test. It has to do what we refer to as a totality of the circumstances, that the court has to weigh a number of factors that are economic in nature, but they also have to make findings about how the land might be important for cultural, historic, and heritage value as well, and they have to evenly balance these factors. So that's the second provision, is to what I think of is that we're giving real substance to the supposed preference for a partition by division.
Yes.
So that's the second big change. And then the third change is that in those instances where a sale would be the appropriate remedy, and we have to remember that heirs' property, though we classically think of it as involving kind of rural property with several acres, heirs' property is not restricted geographically. You can have heirs' property in a rural environment. You can have heirs' property in a suburban
environment. Right, a suburban environment.
You can have heirs' property.
Exactly.
Yeah, and you can have it in an urban environment, right? So you could think of in an urban environment where you would have a single-family home that has been in somebody's family for three generations. You've now got 150 heirs. They can't decide among themselves about how the house could be used. Well, in that context, a sale might actually be the only practical remedy.
Mm-hmm.
But the change in the law we make is that, and this goes back to what I was saying about this economics-only test.
Mm-hmm.
Courts before were saying, well, we're going to order a sale when we think the sale could maximize the wealth in the family. So I'll just take a simple example. Let's say we have a 100-acre parcel, and there's only two heirs. They each have a 50% interest. Under this economics-only test that the courts had been using up to this point, they would say, well, we're going to do an analysis of what the fair market value of the 100 acres is, and I'll just, consistent with your simplifying the math, let me simplify the math too.
Mm-hmm.
And they could say, well, that 100 acres has a market value of $125,000. So the court says, okay, if we sold it, it would be worth $125,000.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would say, okay, well, we could divide it. Well, let's say if they divided it into two 50-acre tracts. And then the court says, well, what would be our estimate of each one of those 50-acre tracts? And the court might say, well, we think each of the 50-acre tracts would be worth $50,000. So if you add those two parcels up that would come from a division, that's 100,000 acres.
Right.
So the court said, well, if we order the whole thing sold, and it got a price of $125,000,
mm-hmm.
that would be more economically beneficial to these two heirs, right? And remember, under the old test, they didn't take into account any historic, cultural, or heritage value.
Right. Mm-hmm.
As I had pointed out in some scholarship a few years ago that I had published, as I said, even under the economics-only test, the analysis has been completely flawed. And here's the flaw. The flaw is at the time that the court was doing that hypothetical valuation of what that 100 acres would be worth in terms of its market value,
mm-hmm.
the court did not take into account that in every state in this country, that has, and every state has laws governing the sale of heirs' property or tenancy in common property, as we, it's the technical legal term, is that every state mandates that the property be sold using procedures that are not designed to get a market value price. They're sold under procedures that are, that it's a forced sale, so they use forced sale procedures that are not designed to get market value. These procedures indicate that the property could be sold in 15 days or 30 days on the courthouse steps with almost no notice, like in some jurisdictions. You just got to publish notice once in the legal section of the newspaper. I don't know about you, but
I don't even read
the legal section of the newspaper.
And you're a lawyer.
And I'm a lawyer. And so people then who have bought these partition sales, they cannot inspect the property.
Right.
And so what it turns out is in these, most of these sales, the property is not sold for anything approaching the fair market value. It sells typically for 30%, 40%, 50%. I gave you that example from the Associated Press's series called Torn from the Land, where it sold for 10%.
Yeah.
And so what we say, the innovation that we say is that, okay, in those instances where a sale may be the appropriate remedy, well, we should have a sales procedure that would actually be designed to get the highest price. So instead of using these fire sale procedures that have been used in most states, we say, no, that the property should be listed and marketed just like you would have property in the normal real estate inventory of some real estate broker.
Right.
So under ours, we basically developed this procedure that we call an open market sale.
Okay.
And under the open market sale, in resolving this partition action, the court would appoint a real estate broker who would have to list the property on the market just like they list their other properties, and they would have to list it for the fair market value of the property based upon an appraisal that would be done.
Gotcha.
And so the idea is, even in those instances where there would be a sale and title might pass outside of the family, that at least that in addition to losing their property rights, they would not be stripped of the real estate wealth they have that is bound up in that property. So I think of those as the three major remedies: the buyout, the adding substance and real meaning to the preference for a partition by division or a partition in kind instead of a partition by sale. And then third, the wealth-protecting open market sale procedure to replace these fire sale procedures that have been used up to this point.
Excellent. Excellent. And I love the fact that you mentioned that you said fire sale, because that's exactly what it is. And it's interesting that that terminology exists, because most people who have supported the work we do at the Gullah Geechee Sea Island Coalition for the last 20 years know that I always say the reason we started the coalition was because people were setting fires on certain sea islands. And when you would run to put that fire out, they set a fire on another sea island. So the people on that island run to put that fire out. Then they set one downtown Savannah or Charleston, so the people there running to set that. And so as you're doing that, you're not working together. So here it is that we want to put the fire out in more than one way. So to end those fire sales, I definitely love the way in which you have outlined this, and definitely having these three major components to this law, because everything that you've articulated here has been things that we have witnessed and I've questioned, because I'm a mathematician by degrees, but everybody wonders if I have a law degree, and I just tell them I just haven't taken the bar. But this is something that is critical to us, that we have an understanding of what could prevent these things. And I know the first thing, everybody, that comes even before the law that we're talking about getting passed in South Carolina that has already been passed, actually, in Alabama, Arkansas, Connecticut, Georgia, Montana, and Nevada, okay? And now it's making our way here through South Carolina legislature. We have to know that the first thing that prevents all of this is you getting along with your family members.
Mm-hmm.
At the family reunions, you need to be discussing something over that barbecue chicken and the fried fish and potato salad. We need to be talking about the wealth that we're trying to protect, as well as how we can have it still amongst ourselves to pass on to the next generation. And so on that note, I want to bring in some family members that I know you've been working very, very closely with, Professor Mitchell, in regard to the folks who are part of the Four Dentists movement. And I definitely want to bring on Shimone, Alan Stevenson, Katrina Coleman, and Jabril Hanif. We want to bring them to the line. They've been holding on. They've been listening in. And we know that their roots are from what we call Trench Island, the thing like that, up on Hilton Head. Good evening, family. How are you to do?